Hello, and welcome to Boss Madle, where I sit down and get real with some pretty amazing, creative women entrepreneurs. So grab yourself a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and get ready to be inspired. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 9th episode of Boss Madle. Today, I sit down with Shelley Strix, the owner of The Linen House, and we talk about everything from starting a business to transitioning into a new one. And I love how candid and open Shelley is about this whole process. You know, very often this whole journey is not really talked about. I remember sitting in the car listening to a different business podcast when I just started my interior design company and listening to a very big interior designer who I admired. And they asked her, you know, how did you get to where you are today? How did you start from point A to where you are now? And she said, well, you know, it started as a hobby. I did a favor for a friend. One thing led to another. And here I am today. And I thought, well, that just skipped the entire journey and the details and really did not explain to us how she really got to where she was. And I found this, you know, frustration that I could not find, you know, stories about really what the process looked like, especially for women and especially for moms. And that was one of the reasons I really started this podcast. I feel like as business owners or someone might be starting a business or you have a business, and even if you don't have one, but we've all been in these moments where we start something new and it's a very humbling process. There's always that learning curve. And the more we can share our experiences and normalize that process, then someone else is having a rough day or rough week, they will feel so much better knowing that they're not the only ones. And as Shelley says, everybody has their whoops moments in business. And I just love that. You know, we've all been there in some way or other. And the more we can normalize that and talk about it, the more easier it becomes to take those moments and turn them into learning opportunities in a positive way. Before I start the interview, I'd love to share a really nice review that I received from a listener named Rivka. Rivka writes, hey, just wanted to tell you how much I'm enjoying your podcasts. A lot of my work is done in front of a computer, and I'm constantly looking for new podcasts to listen to. Yours was fun, light, and relatable. Keep it up. Thank you so much, Rivka. And if you could all leave a review on my iTunes page, that would be so appreciated. Under the Boss Madle podcast, there's a review form where you can leave any review, and that would really, really help. So hopefully you guys can all do that. It takes just a couple of minutes. So without further ado, let me introduce Shelley. Shelley Strix is a notable interior designer, principal of Shelley Strix Design Group, and owner of The Linen House, a high-end bedding boutique in Los Angeles. With experience in residential, commercial, healthcare, and hospitality, it is no surprise that Shelley conquered another niche lacking in the LA design scene. Her years of historical and traditional design experience may be the backbone of her boutique, but it's her heart that is truly passionate about providing a livable luxury lifestyle for her customers. That passion has become infectious to her customers and designers alike. Shelley, welcome to the show. Hi, Shelley. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
This is really exciting. I have so many questions to ask you. And before we start, I actually want to tell listeners that you are the reason that I have this podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. When I met you a while ago to write a design article, I had recorded some of the audio so that I could take it home and run through it again and then formulate my article. And when I was playing it in the kitchen, my husband walked in and he said, this would make a great podcast.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, I have to tell you, honey, first of all, now I'm even more moved to get on here with you. Right. I learned something about myself when you approached me about this. Number one, I learned, hey, I'm actually a pretty communicative person, but I actually think I'm deeply private. And, you know, now that you just told me this, you know, that here I was, I really motivated you to start this, you know, it's pushing me more. And I came across this amazing, amazing quote. I don't know who said it, but it was quoted that said, tell the story of the mountain you climbed because your words can become a page in someone else's survival guide. And when I saw that, I just said, oh my gosh, okay, I'm getting on. We are officially podcasting, Connie. We have a lot to cover and a lot to discuss. And, you know, hopefully, a listener far out there somewhere in the world will be listening to this. And, you know, maybe something that will be said could be a page in their own survival guide. So let's podcast.
Yes. Okay. Sounds great. So let's go back a little bit, and if you can tell listeners how you started your business.
Okay, so in order to understand how the Linen House evolved, the Linen House is a luxury bedding boutique out in the Los Angeles area. We have to kind of take a few steps back. The Linen House evolved out of my interior design business, Shelley Strix Design Group, and has been kind of a work in progress for many years. Years back, I was living in Lawrence, New York when I had my first child, and I lived in a condo complex actually with Ricky Forking, who herself is an interior designer, who also went out into retail with a store called Shop Level. You could check her out on Instagram, located in Cedarhurst. And the two of us kind of pursued this passion that we had together. We took some classes together. We pursued it. After the classes that I took, I decided to dibble and dabble with some friends out in Long Island who were purchasing their first homes. And you have to understand, the houses in Lawrence, New York, until today, you know, are beautiful. They're Tudor, they're colonials. They have so much integrity, so much authenticity to them. And I really truly developed a love for restoring something that was old and kind of bringing back its original splendor and youth into its property. Life had kind of taken me another route. I came back to my hometown of LA, continued to wanting to pursue design, and I had an amazing decorator who gave me the most sound advice and said to me, "Shelley, you'll know that this is meant to be for you to kind of pursue interior design if you take on two free jobs, and from the two free jobs, referrals will kind of come out of it and spiral out of it." And she said, "That'll be the clearest indication to you if design in LA is meant to work for you." And I took on a free job with an amazing builder, and the builder actually began referring me left and right. Within the first 2 years, I think he referred me about 40 homes, which built up my portfolio tremendously.
Wow.
But those 40 homes, Connie, were predominantly in historical areas in LA, which meant I began to have a little bit of a knack of the codes of historical regulations and rules that were being applied to these homes in LA. And that was, you know, 15 years back. And that was where things began to evolve with the Linen House 15 years back. These homes were, I mean, beautiful, Spanish-styled Tudors in the Hancock Park area. The clients that I was dealing with were acquiring tons of antiques. These houses were authentic. They carried integrity to them. And, you know, I began seeing this pattern that even though my clients would travel the world, honey, to find beautiful antiques and to find refurbished items for their home, the one thing stayed consistent was when they began looking for bedding, the one request that they gave to me was, "Find me a livable luxury product," which means a product that they could sleep on, a product that their dogs — we are total animal lovers here in the city of Los Angeles — a product that their dogs could sleep on with them, you know, with their dirty paws, a product that their babies could spit up on, a product that truly could complement the integrity of their homes, meaning this bedding should have old world craftsmanship, high quality cotton, yet, because they really wanted to live with it, it had to be a livable luxury product. And I figured, how hard could this be, honey? This is right. The city of Los Angeles. This is Hollywood. There's got to be tons of bedding boutiques that could hit this. And there are tons of absolutely beautiful bedding boutiques here in the LA area. So I began like any designer would, honey. I would go, you know, thinking I had my little niche, and I went down this road and that road and this boulevard and that boulevard. And I walked into one beautiful boutique, which had gorgeous, gorgeous lines of bedding. And I turned over one of the packages on the shelf, and it said dry clean only. And I was like, "Huh? Dry clean only? You know, like who wants to sleep with dry clean only sheets?" Even though I know there are plenty of people there that send their linen to the cleaners, but that's not what my clients were looking for. And I went into the next boutique, Chani, and I said, okay, here we go. This one's going to have what I need, Flipped over the package, dry clean only. I said, right. This is crazy. This is Los Angeles. And I began to kind of collect all my clients' bedding needs. I developed these lists. I would pack up all my clients' samples and I would head to Brooklyn, New York. And I did such a bedding trip, a shopping trip, about 2 to 3 times a year. And the wonderful team at Elegant Linen were beyond helpful at the time. And as time kind of went on, honey, I said, like, why are we not pursuing this in the city of Los Angeles? So, you know, one of the things on the back end that really kind of motivated me even further to pursue this dream of livable luxury goods here in LA was my Hungarian grandmother. I used to sit with her weekly, a few times a week. We would have soup together. We would have coffee together. And I would kind of always tell her this dream. You know, here I was, I had this design firm. Things were going great, honey. I was working hard. I had wonderful clients. I felt truly blessed. But I was so passionate about providing for my clients. And I began to tell my grandmother, you know, there's no such place in LA that you could really find bedding that is machine washable, that could be customized, that could truly be a livable luxury product. And in my grandmother's Hungarian accent, she would always say, just do it. What are you waiting for? Just do it, you know? And I you know, it became this like weekly topic of conversation. It was this dream that I had. And unfortunately, my grandmother had passed away semi-suddenly. And there were many unfinished conversations that I kind of took upon myself to say, like, what are you waiting for? Like, just do this. And a beautiful bungalow became available on Melrose Avenue in Hancock Park. And the linen house evolved itself.
And what a beautiful bungalow it is. Just for listeners, yes, who have not been in there, it is stocked with beautiful bedding and baby blankets and hostess gifts and candles and tablecloths that are exquisite. So it became so much more than just, filling a specific need.
It did. It really became a venue of a lifestyle for many people at all different price points and of all different calibers. You know, we have an array of throw blankets. We have an array of these items and accessories that everything, honey, that is coming in the store is totally livable, because that is a lifestyle that I am trying to create for my customers, that true livable luxury lifestyle.
Right. So true. And you know, we had discussed this previously when I started writing this article that inspired the podcast. We had mentioned this idea of, you know, people going back to the old world way of making things. Like when I asked you what trends you saw, you said, well, I was not really seeing a particular trend, but this direction, this flow of customers are flocking to you for this.
Absolutely. Well, there's definitely an element, at least here in the Los Angeles area demographically, of people wanting the livable luxury lifestyle. But there is slightly a trend that I am kind of picking up on in the bedding department, in the linen industry right now, tabletop and bedroom, which is old is new again. And traditional elements are definitely coming back full force, honey. You'll begin to see on a lot of the bedding collections now, beautiful hem stitches, beautiful laces, old world workmanship, whip stitches, anything of the sort. Embroidery is back. And even more interesting that I've noticed is at a time where our contemporaries, both me and you, which maybe we're considered the millennial, generation or whatever it is, but I'm finding that our contemporaries are starting to go back into their grandmother's attics, into their family heirlooms, and taking out those pieces that mean so much more than just something they could find on the internet. It's becoming very tangible. They're trying to find ways to bring those heirlooms kind of back into their lifestyle. When I have now a younger girl, let's say a real hipster from the LA area coming into my store to shop for tablecloths, it's really fascinating, honey. She's bringing me her gorgeous grandmother's hair in China, you know, and saying like, well, what interesting vibe can I combine with that? So there is definitely this traditional trend that is, it is coming back. Feelings, emotions, touching, sensory in the heart, tangible with the fingers, it is back. I think we were so stuck on this e-commerce, and e-commerce is so major right now, but we were so stuck in this industry for so long, this generic online concept. But you know, traditional is coming back.
So true. I remember House Beautiful had done a whole issue on these smaller mom and pop shops in America and how people love them because they didn't want to buy furniture online or or accessories. They wanted to go into a store and meet the owner and hear the story and feel the product. And how, to the contrary, these businesses are thriving amidst the e-commerce.
Yes. I mean, you know, it has been difficult for some, especially in some areas and neighborhoods where the rent is extremely high. But, you know, we hope to all stick it out, you know, to stick it out and ride the wave. But it is coming back so full force. You know, it's reminding me and showing me that there is still so much heart and soul that is left, you know, despite the fact that we live our lives now on the other side of the screen. Mm-hmm. It warms my heart. It's fabulous.
Absolutely. I am a traditional at heart. And so I love to see this. I really do. So, you know, was there a particular fear or challenge that you were able to overcome when starting this new venture of yours?
Yes, definitely. You know, I think my number one challenge, my number one fear was transitioning my clients from the Shelley Strix Design Group to the Linen House. And, you know, you have to understand, any of the clients that I had were truly long-term clients. They were more than clients. I don't even want to call them clients, and I don't even want to call them friends, because they were truly family. Honey, we shared happy times together. Unfortunately, we shared sad times together. We shared sickness. We shared health. We shared joyous occasions. We were truly a team. And the idea that I had to leave them and, you know, maybe have them interpret it as me giving up on them, which is so far from the truth of what it was definitely a challenge, number one. I felt like I was losing a part of my family. That was number one. The second challenge that I had, which to me was like the most humbling, was here I was. I was a designer. I was really comfortable in my element. I had wonderful tradesmen that were working under me. I knew the rhythm. I knew the law of the land. And now I was going into retail. And guess what? I knew nothing about retail. I knew nothing about the back infrastructure of retail. I knew nothing about purchasing systems on retail systems, whatever, any of the systems, the layers, credit card systems, and oh my gosh, I knew nothing. And oh my God, honey, how difficult was it for me to humble myself and for me to ask for help from people around me, for me to ask for help from my reps. You know, I remember calling one of my reps, Michael, who had just taught me all the ropes, God bless him. I remember calling him and just saying, Michael, I need to talk to you. And I'm so embarrassed to ask you this, but there's something wrong because I have all these price books in front of me. And how is it that every other boutique could just shoot out a price to a customer and I can't figure out how to get the stuff from the book into the system, and you know, he said to me, he goes, oh my gosh, Shelley, he goes, the best thing you could have done was ask, because that's the only way you're really going to learn, and we have to stick together, and I'm always here to answer your questions. And oh my gosh, honey, was that like, to be able to ask, and it's okay to ask, you know? And what I tell now all new business owners is try and surround yourself with colleagues. Don't call them competitors. They're not competitors. with colleagues that you can truly depend on, that you could ask even the most humbling question, because when people band together and work together, only good can happen. Only good can happen. So that by far, I think, was, oh my gosh, what went in? Even the inventorying mistakes in the beginning, questions that my accountant had for me, I knew nothing. But you know, you get the hang of it. And if you just listen to those around you and you humble yourself, and you know, it's good things can happen. Good things can happen. So we've made it over the hill. We are in a much better place now, but good things can happen. But that was truly my biggest challenge as a retailer.
I can imagine. I remember my first job while I was at FIT. I worked in Soho for a linen company. Yeah. And they had a shop that was a retail division. They mostly did wholesale, but they had this cute little shop in Soho. And it was my first week. I knew nothing about linen, and no one thought to train me. So this customer walked in looking to spend money, and she's throwing these names like Perkel, Satine, Threadcamp. Yeah. I had no idea what she was talking about. I then went to do another sale. I accidentally, instead of ringing up $50, I rang up $5,000. The boss came in later, ecstatic. Yeah. We had a $5,000 sale. They're like, no, that's just the new one. She messed up the numbers.
Whoops. Yeah. So we've kind of all been there and all done that, you know? And for anyone to say that they've kind of started a business and didn't have those whoops moments, oh, everybody had their whoops moments.
So true. So now speaking of, you know, I just listed off a couple terms like this idea of thread count and sateen and Perkel. Can you talk to listeners a little bit about what that is and what's truly important amidst all those, you know, different categories?
Yeah, this is such a good topic of conversation that I feel so passionate about. You know, a lot of people come into the store and they start just spitting out this lingo, this jargon, which half the time they're not really so aware. I'm going to bring a little bit of clarity, at least now, into the podcast. But there is a tremendous movement right now. You know, people, the first thing people say is, I want an 800 thread count cotton. There is a tremendous movement right now within some of the higher end bedding companies that's called drop the thread count. And the reason for that is really, the lingo doesn't always matter, honey. What really matters is the weave and construction of the cotton and the feel of the cotton. Because remember, just because something may sound like it would be fabulous and right up your alley, it actually indeed may not be very comfortable for you at all, or too thick or too hot for you, or too crunchy or too soft or too silky. So I try to kind of, when my customers come into the store, eliminate that whole department of lingo. But to bring some clarity, the number one question that I always get from customers is, can you describe the difference between a Perkel cotton and a cotton sateen? That is my number one. And the most simplistic way to describe it is, a Perkel sheet is a little bit more plain in weave. I'll explain it in a simplistic form of how to explain the difference between a Perkel cotton and a cotton sateen. A Perkel cotton is a sheet that is more plain in weave, a little bit more matte to the finish, a little bit more crisp to the hand. And you know, if you're actually like a night sweater, Perkel sheets tend to feel a little colder to the body, a little crunchier. I have some people that describe it like, you know, there's two types of cottons. I like the crunchy cold one. That's a cotton Perkel. And then a cotton sateen, which has a completely different drape, a little bit of a sheen to the cotton, that's created and woven to get you more of like a silkier, smoother finish, which some people describe as having a little bit more heat retention to it. So a different feel, but we try again, let's not get stuck on the wording of anything. Let's come in, let's touch, let's feel, and let's analyze what would be good for you and your sleeping patterns.
I love that. Shelly, is there a common myth about motherhood, work, being a woman that you wish to dispel?
Yes, very much so. I have been a working mom for as long as I can remember, a full-time working mom. I think a lot of people had said to me in the beginning, like, how on earth would you possibly have time for your kids or to give your kids your undivided attention? And I took that so to heart, honey, because I truly feel as a working mom, if you have proper time management, everything could fall into place. It requires proper time management. It requires planning. But it also allows for you to balance a little bit better, and allows for you that when you are with your children, if you have that mindset to be fully with your children, to kind of keep that work and family life a little bit separate so that your children never feel like they're fighting over the phone calls that are coming into you, or you couldn't get something done for them because you were just too busy at your store. It requires planning. It is not easy. It requires help. It also requires help. We are not superwomen, but it is doable. It is possible. And I think it is the most phenomenal thing for children in today's age to kind of see and learn from.
Yeah, I was raised by a working mom, and especially now looking back and knowing her personality and realizing she really needed to work. She would not have been who she is and was if she was at home all day. And for some women, there really is a passion to stay at home and be with your children, and that is great.
But that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's every woman really has to figure out what makes them tick at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're a very busy woman. You have, many roles that you juggle. What does balance mean to you?
What does balance mean to me? Well, I think first and foremost, balance is always doable. Okay. But family, no matter what, in that balance equation has to come first at the end of the day.
Okay.
We could balance. That is not a problem. But it means really what I touched upon before, which is when you create that family work balance, they have to remain slightly separate so that when you're with your family, you are with your family. Your eyes are on your children. They're not stuck on a cell phone, Instagram, something, texting back a customer. It's a balance that has a very fine line, but it has to be kept slightly separate in order to properly balance them.
Sure.
But I really do think balance is there, but the scale does tick slightly over to one side when it comes to family, first and foremost, no matter what.
I like that you clarified that. It's very hard for women to imagine having it perfectly balanced in all areas. And by the very fact that you say, well, family's first, which should be the case, but we sometimes forget it, clarifies things for us, and we're not trying to spread ourselves so thin. There's a priority that we have to keep at all times.
It's not only that, family is first. Yes, family is first, but on our list of priorities, in order to obtain the balance, you have to put that family first. You have to make those personal lists of what have to be done in your life, because it's important. It's important. Your children need that, So for sure. I want to say everything is equal, but it's not, it can't be.
Absolutely. Now, I'll quickly add, there's a book, and it's called Essentialism. I forgot the author's name, by Greg something. And what he says is that balance means that wherever you are at that point, whatever you're doing, you're in it fully. It doesn't mean that at that moment, everything is divided equally. So if you're at work, if you're with your kids, you're with your kids.
Yes, I love that. That is so true. That is so true. And that ultimately creates the perfect balance, because that's how you define balance.
True. I love it. So a key component in balance is self-care. What does self-care look like for you? And that's personal too.
Oh my goodness gracious. So I'm like blushing a little bit, honey, as we bring this up. I'm blushing. I'm touching my face because my face feels a little hot. But this is such a topic that I am so private about. And not only so private, at the same time, I want to scream it on top of the mountaintops because it is so important. But my level of self-care is actually self-meditation daily. I know nobody was really expecting that. I don't know if you want to call it self-meditation or if you want to call it breathing, daily stops of breathing, but there is a tremendous element that I believe in of mind, body, and soul connection. And, you know, I think before you even talk about the mind, body, soul connection, I think every woman has to just at least begin by listening to what their heart is telling them, by what their mind is telling them, by what their body is telling them. And, you know, there are those generic avenues of self-care, going to get a manicure, going for a massage, taking a walk, reading a book in a little nook in a little corner. And that is self-care, and that may work for you. But I think women have to be really honest with themselves. And at a time when we multitask, our lives revolve around multitasking. We've got cell phones, we've got Apple Watches, we've got, I mean, there is no such thing as one task being done anymore at a time. I think we need to stop, we need to collect ourselves, we need to breathe. It comes with a lot of self-practice. Honey, this is not something that happens overnight. Many years ago, I was trained by someone fabulous in LA to do self-meditation. There are wonderful, wonderful people here in LA that could help you. Yoga classes are a wonderful start, if you don't want to go full force. But this is not something that happens overnight, self-meditation. This is something through self-practice, through consistency. I mean, I stop 2 times a day. It's usually in the morning and in the evening. And I have gotten to a point where I could do it anywhere, honey. I could do it in my office. I could do it on carpool line. I could do it on the front stoop of my store. Just to stop and deep breathe and to collect your thoughts and to count your blessings and to refocus. And to just settle your mind, is just, to me, I don't think I would be able to do what I do every day without that self-care stop, without that stop in my life. Very important to me.
I love that. You know, there's more and more scientific evidence that meditation helps with so many issues such as anxiety and depression. And there's this book, 10% Happier. I'm not sure if you heard of it, by Dan Harris.
Never heard of it.
So he was a news anchor and he had a panic attack live on TV. You can YouTube it. It was embarrassing.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And he was like, oh boy, I got to figure some things out. And he was, you know, very skeptical about what this is. And he wrote this book about how it helped him. I'm still trying to learn. I actually have a funny story for you. So do you know there's Dead Meditation on La Brea Avenue?
Yes.
In Los Angeles?
You know, I've never gone in there, but I keep driving by. What's going on in there?
It's
What's
great. Going on so in they there? Have these guided meditation classes, and they are wonderful. Some are a little more out there, shall we say, than others. But one night I was paying the parking meter to go into the studio, and I see reflection in the studio window, and it looks like orange and yellow. And I'm thinking, that's odd. Mm. Are there a lot of cars? Is it the light? Is it dark? And then I see flames. So what they have is these beautiful scented candles lit all over the studio.
Oh.
And everyone is super zen. And there is a lady wearing a fur vest, reading a book, sipping tea. There are two people next to her sipping tea, reading two other books, and her vest is on fire. But they are also, yes. Then run into the studio, I'm like, oh my God, your vest, there's flames. And the lady goes, now, ma'am, please be quiet. There's a class in session. And I'm like, no, you don't understand.
Oh my God. That's a crazy story.
That was, and it was the calmest reaction I've ever seen. They're like, slowly, they put it out, and they,
God.
It just was so zen in there. I thought, oh my God, if they're calm for that, I need to get
so something. That's extreme zen. Extreme zen. I'm talking about zen of just my self-thought, you know? I'm talking zen of my self-thought, which really, gosh, everybody should just stop, honey, every day. True. Just stop to count your blessings and deep breathe. Because if we're just so much more, if we're just filled with so much more gratitude, we would just be so much happier, so much clearer, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give someone who is just starting out? And it doesn't have to be specifically in your field, but anyone starting out with your own business or venture?
Well, yeah, I think my number one piece of advice would be, it takes time to properly build an infrastructure and you really need patience. I know you want to see the good, the financial outcome, but step by step, you know, things really do happen and you have to have patience. And with that patience, you also have to understand that everything that happens, it happens for a reason. We may not understand it short term, but long term, we could look back and say, oh, that deal didn't go through. Now I know why, because it was a stepping stone for something else. But it's that level of patience, because if you're not going to be patient and you're going to run through everything and rush the process of creating that infrastructure, you're going to fail. It's not going to work. That, I think, is my number one. My number two bit of advice that I feel is very important, that I felt a little bit, I hyper-focused on at my store, was know your product and know your product really well, okay? So if you sell clothing, don't just sell the clothing on by trend. I mean, begin to learn about your fabrics, honey. Begin to learn polyester looks better on this type of body type. Cotton lays a different way if you kind of have a muffin top, you know, or something of the sort.
Right.
Hyper focus on what your product is to fully understand the level, the back end level of what needs to be prepared. You know, when I was a really young girl, I think I was maybe 6 or 7 at the time, my father said to me, I want to teach you a tongue twister. Can you repeat this tongue twister? Can you say it 10 times over and over again? And it was, poor preparation leads to piss poor performance. Okay, that
yes.
was the tongue twister. And he yes. said, say it again. And he reminded me about this tongue twister when I was 10, and when I was 15, and when I was 20, and when I was 25, and when I was 30. Truly prepare yourself. Understand your product on such a deep level. Understand the factories where your product stems from. I know about my factories, my companies, my cotton types, the different types of embroideries. I mean, really study it and really know it, because you'll be able to sell your product a lot better. And the last bit of advice, which was given to me by a very dear friend who owns a very large company, and it so stuck with me and I remind myself of it time and time again, is his advice was, remember to thank God for all the little positive steps and little positive things that happen along the way, because at one point you're going to need to turn to God and you're going to ask for help. And how can you ask for help if you never said thank you?
Wow.
And, you know, that's going back on that whole level of gratitude that we spoke about before, you know, stopping in your self-care regimen and just being grateful, you know, being grateful and counting those blessings within yourself, but counting those blessings also to God. And I totally hold by that. I totally stick with that daily. So that would definitely be my third piece of advice to give to a new business owner.
So well said. I think that's advice that we can all take, whatever stage mm-hmm. we are in our career. It really
Absolutely.
Is so important. So Shelley, we are down to our favorite part, or for some people, their favorite part. It's where I do a round of quick questions and ask you your favorites.
Okay.
So let's start with your favorite book.
Option B by Sheryl Sandberg, hands down for sure. I don't know if anyone has read Sheryl Sandberg's books. She has one called Lean In, which is about women in the workforce, but it was Option B that really spoke to me. Option B kind of talks about resiliency, which we all need. And even though the book came out of a fortunate death mm-hmm. of her husband for her and her family, she began to realize that every person truly needs resiliency, because when we're starting businesses, we have our option A. That is our one-track mind. We are going to get to option A, but guess what? sometimes option A doesn't happen, and we need to just kick option B out of the ballpark, you know, and make the best of option B. And I just was so moved by that book, not only from a business perspective, from a personal perspective, that in life we plan for one thing, and sometimes we just need to prepare ourselves for the backup option and make the backup option just killer.
Absolutely. I love that book. Do you have a favorite easy dinner?
Oh, yes. So easy dinner for sure is a crock pot dinner on multiple levels. So let me explain. There is nothing better than coming home after a long work day at 5 p.m. or 4 o'clock, whenever you get home, and having your house smell like deliciously cooked food that is total rock star status. Yes, it is a crock pot dinner. I have a whole treasure trove of them. I was once told by a friend, Shelley, kosher cookbook on crock pot dinners. And I thought about it for some time for the busy working mom. But yes, one of my favorites is a chicken. I call it a chicken cacciatore, even though it's a spin on chicken cacciatore. But I take the chicken, I put it in the crock pot, I pour marinara sauce on it, I pour a can of corn, I pour a can of peas, sometimes I dice up eggplant, zucchini, and I make it with a fresh pot of hot white rice, which just takes a few minutes, and a fresh salad, and we are dinner and done. And there's so many of those little hacks, you know, that I play with, but crock pot dinners all the way.
I love that. And you had actually given me this idea, and I made it last night for dinner. I put it on Instagram
stories.
Was it a big hit? Delicious.
It's awesome.
And I think I'm on a crock pot roll, and the person I interviewed this morning had said the same thing, crock pot all the way. So this, you know, clearly.
I'm telling you, we need to start like a crock pot recipe group or something, because it's amazing what can be done in a crock pot.
Yeah. And sometimes it's days when I have to do carpool and I'm coming home the same time as my kids. Those are the worst days. Everyone's coming through the door at 5:15. What's for dinner?
Yes.
So that's very, very helpful.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite quote or saying?
Yes, I do. I think if I would have to pick a quote or saying that truly meant something to me, I had once read somewhere that said, the best thing I ever did was believe in me. And I think we have to truly believe in our inner voice. We have to be proud. We have to be clear. We have to be strong, because really the only person who can pave the way is you, and only you. So believe in yourself.
Yep. Love that. Do you have a favorite city?
Yeah. Ojai, California. the capital of tranquility. I love Ojai. I love the energy there. I love the community of people there. I love the artists there. It is just wonderful. If you live in Southern California, go drive yourself down to Ojai, California for a weekend. Wonderful.
I second that.
Yes.
Last question. Do you have a favorite girl boss or role model?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer, because I really respect all women. Mm-hmm. Who try their hardest and do the best that they could. And every woman has something that really stands out to them. But I think if I really think about this, I think my true girl boss, my true role model would have to probably be my mother and my mother-in-law. Each have given me such special components in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother used to always say, you know, your mother teaches you everything you know in the first half of your life, and then your mother-in-law takes over and teaches you everything you know in the second part of your life. And you know, that was really, it's really true. But I thank God have been blessed with such a wonderful mother and mother-in-law. And I just learned from both of them daily. It's very special for me.
That's great. That's really special. It's funny, a lot of people have been mentioning their personal family members as role models. And it's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, there are definitely, because it develops of who I am, you know, it's really who I am. But there is, you know, there are definitely business women out there who are hardcore. I mean, this Sheryl Sandberg is, whoa, she's whoa. But
This is just a fun one, and I'm going to put you on the spot for this one. Do you have a particular designer or someone in the interior design world that you just love their style or their the business that they built?
Let me think about that one. In the design world.
Because, you know, your background is interior design. You're so involved in it.
Sure. Let me think about this for a second. In the, God, you know, I'm so the type of person that loves and appreciates like so many different styles and elements of design. You know, I have to tell you, there's one name that has like consistently has set the tone. I think over the years, Barbara Barry has just been wow. And I'll tell you what I find wow about Barbara Barry. She started off as an interior designer, came out with a line of furniture for Baker, had, you know, spread out into plumbing fixtures. I mean, Barbara Barry really reached far out, you know, and I feel like with her furnishing, she'll really be consistent in the design field for a long time. But what I respect, I think, about her so much, and I think any artist would agree with this, whether they're a dancer, whether they play a musical instrument, whether they do interior design. Mm-hmm. When you're a true artist, you kind of have to explore all different mediums of art. And again, that if you're a decorator, you have to explore your interior design, your product content, your fabrics, your, you know. And I think Barbara really, really did that. And I really commend her for that in That's a major great. Way.
Yeah, sure. That was fun. I was just always curious because, you know, we're kind of in the same world and there's so many women out there, but she really was one of the first, I think, particularly in our generation.
She was. And you want to know something else? I'll go one step further. Mm-hmm. Diane Keaton, okay, who's an actress, who has such a passion for interior design as well. The same thing. She is a woman who is a true artist in many, many different forms. And she wasn't scared to kind of venture out, Diane Keaton, and go into this world of kind of interior design. I don't know if you know anything right now, but she has been, you know, redecorating her personal homes to such a fabulous extent.
Yes.
And between her acting career and so on and so forth, she's another one who, you know, has maybe remained a little bit more quiet on the sidelines, but, you know, bravo to the women who truly listen to their heart and soul and explore different mediums of art. I think that's fabulous.
Yes. And for listeners, I just want to let you guys know, I will include all these details in the show notes. Diane Keaton has a beautiful book out, so I can include that link. It's really a fun read. So Shelley, where can listeners find you?
Okay, well, we are on Instagram at the Linen House LA. There is a website that is coming up, www.thelinenhousela.com. And of course, you can always find us in our home away from home, the Linen House, at 6017 Melrose Avenue in LA.
Shelley, thank you so much for joining us
today.
Thank
you.
This was really fun.
Absolutely. It was great speaking, Connie.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening in on our thoughtful, authentic conversation today. Stay tuned for next week's episode and make it a great one.